From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of May 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will be here to take a look at the weather forecast for the weekend and going forward. And he has some ideas about the summer, especially out west. You'll want to stick around for that one. And we'll have a bio of Ted Seifert. He joined us on our Commodity Week program. Up front, I asked him several questions about his background. That's pretty normal course for us as we bring on new panelists that haven't been with us on the radio. You might recognize Ted Seifert's name from Zahner Ag Hedge. And if you follow him on Twitter, he's called at The Ted Spread. We'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Friday. July corn, a penny and three quarters higher, $3.19 and a quarter. September, $3.23 up one. December, a quarter higher at $3.32. And the March of next year, unchanged at $3.44 and three quarters. May corn of 2021 at $3.52, down a quarter of a cent. July soybeans up a penny and a half, $8.38 and a half, the settlement price. August at $8.40 and three quarters, up one and three quarters. November, $8.45 and a half, a penny and three quarters higher. And January beans up two and a quarter at $8.48. Next year's May contract at $8.37, five and a quarter higher. Bean oil futures at $26.58, 40 cents higher. The bean meal at $2.87.50, down 70 cents. July wheat futures soft red, $5 and a quarter, down two. The hard red July at $4.52 and a quarter, up a half cent. Live cattle futures at $97 even, $2.87 and a half higher in the June contract. The August up 82 and a half cents for the day. And feeder cattle finished the August feeders up 2.5 cents at $1.31.7 and a half. Lean hogs per 100 pounds in the June, 87 and a half cents lower at $57.87 and a half cents. The wholesale price of gasoline at 96 and 8 tenths of a cent per gallon. That's up 5 and 4 tenths for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands around 95 points higher. We're joined by Mike Zuzolo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Mike. It's Friday. That's a good thing.
It is a good thing. And we got through the May report, Todd.
Yeah. So what do you think of those numbers in particular? I want to know what you think of the usage numbers that USDA put out for corn.
I think USDA took a page from the Department of Energy when it came to ethanol, and that was probably the most brightest spot, I should say, in the report itself, as it's more of a V-shaped demand recovery. When you look at the energy side, they only took 100 million bushels off of the current year's ethanol, and that was kind of what we had talked about. Jackie and I had talked about last week on Commodity Week, and I think also they put the new crop up to 5.2 billion bushels, and they also did a pretty nice job of keeping meat production on track and actually bringing it back pretty strong late 2020, early 2021. So from a demand perspective, I thought it was a very strong report, and as I said, more of a V-shaped recovery and kind of following along with the idea that this is why crude oil is making an eight-week high, or a fresh eight-week high here. So that was the good news. I think the bad news, Todd, was that we still saw global wheat supplies build even more than what the trade was expecting by almost 5 million tons more. And so I think between that and the fact that we did just get massively big numbers for 2021 crop year for both corn and to a lesser degree beans, the trade, especially with the rhetoric between the U.S. and China heating up again and a new three-week high in the U.S. dollar, the trade has no desire without real planting issues to really stake a claim in covering shorts, let alone take on a big long position. So I think that's where the feed grains are probably the ones still most limping along in that respect, with maybe a little bit brighter of an outlook for the soy complex, maybe as early as next week, I think.
Is there any place that you see planting issues that will provide enough lift to the market?
Not right now, and it probably wouldn't show up till later in the year. I think that your state, Indiana, even parts of Ohio that are starting to run, and maybe parts of Missouri, are getting into some emergence issues. But if the warmer, wetter weather comes along like it's supposed to this weekend and into next week, that may go away. It's probably worth watching. I think the bigger issue is the dry weather belt that we see developing from eastern Colorado that's now encompassing about 45% of Kansas. And it's really getting into Nebraska at this point. Dry land and irrigated Nebraska clients I've spoken with, essentially from York, Nebraska, all the way over to the Iowa-Nebraska border, I should say, are starting to feel the pinch where they haven't had much more than maybe a half an inch in the last 3 or 4 weeks, and they're really needing a rain. That could be something, but like we've talked about a lot before, it's really not going to matter for corn before it matters for wheat. In other words, if the trade really wants to trade weather, they have got plenty of weather to trade in the hard red wheat belt. I heard from a client out by Hayes just yesterday, and he said crop insurance adjusters are starting to come out at 1 and 3 bushels at this point.
Wow. That's something else. I knew that they were having a tough time, but if there are total failures there, that's wholly different. So we'll have to watch that. Do you think wheat will have some follow through on this at this point? And I guess it all comes back to, because the U.S. is, you know, not the first place that people go to hunt down wheat across the globe. It must go back to the global numbers.
It really does. And it goes back to the currencies. I mean, whether you're talking about Brazilian soybeans or whether you're talking about U.S. hard red wheat, it's really going to go back to the currencies. And I think this is where this week's low in soft red July futures was 496 and three quarters. This week's low in hard red July futures was 447. I don't think that should be taken out. Those numbers should be taken out at all in the aftermath of the report that we've dialed in the biggest number at this point. If they do get taken out, Todd, I can tell you I'll be hedging beans, because if they get taken out, I'm guessing that the U.S. and China and the rhetoric is getting pretty serious and the market's getting pretty nervous and the dollar is becoming a pretty serious safe haven again. And again, it made a 3-week high, and it could give you some buy signals if it goes much higher than it already has on some of the longer term charts. So, you know, it's one of those things where it seems like we take one step forward and two steps back. We've got COVID-19 starting to break away a little bit. We're opening restaurants in Kansas City, Missouri this weekend. We're starting to see quite a bit more traffic on the highways. That summer grilling season, that summer driving season you and I have been hitting so hard when we talk, they seem to be really coming around. USDA's data shows that. Department of Energy's data shows that. But now we've got the second step backwards is the U.S.-China are really kicking each other pretty hard and punching each other pretty hard in the arm right now, with China talking about maybe making an issue with Apple. That you can't get any more serious than that when it comes to our trade negotiations.
Yeah. So do you think that the purchases made so far were in line, but really that everybody had been counting on new crop soybean sales to be the big bucket load that headed towards China? Can they pull everything out of South America again for another year?
I don't think they can, but I think they do their best. I think this is where we may be underestimating them, especially before the election. COFCO came out, I believe, on Wednesday night, Thursday night, somewhere around there, and talked about how they are making room for only U.S. beans from essentially March, April, all the way into January of next year, and that they are going to, you know, move into a phase one type mindset as far as how much they buy from us, with soybeans being probably the number one leader in terms of physical demand to get us to close to that $40 to $50 billion threshold. But I think one of the things that the president probably needs to realize is that if we don't come out of COVID and we start a trade war, a bona fide trade war with China, they'll probably feel the most substantial in power in terms of bargaining power before the election. So I think if he really wants to take China on, he should wait until he wins a second term, because this could not go well for him if we have an issue with COVID and then we're also in it with China as well. And but then we would once again in the agricultural industry be right in the middle of it.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, my pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Susilo is with GlobalAnalytics.biz. Let's take some time now to check the weather forecast on this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is here from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agrible. Eric, thanks for being with us. We've had some rainfall. Can you give me your quick assessment of where we stand?
Well, Todd, after the record-setting cold from last week, and it's so nice to see a bit of a pattern change with some much warmer temperatures. Unfortunately, with that warmer air, we've also had quite a bit more moisture. And over the last couple of days, we've seen some pretty heavy rainfall across parts of the state of Illinois. Specifically, northern Illinois has been hit pretty hard here. I've seen some maps that have shown several inches of rainfall, over 3 in the northern counties. Whereas down farther south, it's been a bit more hit or miss. Just checked my gauge this morning out of the most recent storms I had, about a half inch total of rainfall so far. We're not out of the woods yet with this pattern. We still have to deal with some more rainfall throughout, again today, chances today, but then into Saturday and Sunday. But finally after Sunday, the pattern is adjusting in a way that might be favorable for some warmer and drier weather into a big chunk of next week. And this is what's happening. Right now off the West Coast, there's a deep upper level low, and it is just barely moving toward the West Coast. Meanwhile, between Cuba and Florida, there's a tropical system that's developing that is going to be getting north of the Bahamas this weekend and then racing off to the northeast. What's interesting about this setup, those two things, is by the middle of next week, really the beginning of next week, we're going to get ourselves set up into what we call an omega pattern. In other words, the trough in the west digs in, a ridge comes right up in the middle part of the country, and a broader trough develops over the eastern part of the United States, including the eastern Corn Belt. Now that is going to keep things on the cooler side, not cold like it was, but on the cooler side and wetter side for the eastern Corn Belt. But we're going to be far enough to the west of it that we might get several drier days starting on Sunday, Sunday afternoon, getting through the rest of the beginning of next week with some drier, warmer conditions. And that could really help a lot of folks dry out and get the rest of the crop planted. Now, that omega pattern usually blocks up, which means it usually sticks around for several days. I don't think that's going to be the case with this particular one. It's going to move out here by the end of next week and not stick around too long. So that's good. We want to keep our weather systems moving.
They'll keep them moving, but I'm wondering whether there are bigger picture issues that you're worried about.
Bigger picture things, though, that I'm thinking about. The last couple of systems that have moved through have not put rainfall down on the regions that we have drought expanding out of Colorado, Kansas, parts of Oklahoma, Texas. In fact, the latest drought monitor, which came out on Thursday, sent a little sliver of D0 drought, that's the lowest category of drought, into Iowa. At the same time, it's been a little drier than normal down in the parts of the southeastern United States. And that just starts to get us thinking about what happens if that drought spreads. Now, at this particular point, long-range model analysis from both the European model and the U.S. version of that, called the CFSV2 model, neither models are bringing in overly dry conditions in the midsection of the United States, and that includes parts of the Midwest as we progress through the next month. However, are these models solid gold? Are they great? Can we trust them all the time? No. And we know that oftentimes when there's already dry air in places, we have to be on the lookout for any would-be precipitation events to underperform. So I want everyone to be watching very carefully the next few drought monitor updates, especially with what's going on in parts of Nebraska and Iowa, then getting back further to the south and west, so Kansas, Colorado, Texas, Oklahoma. If by the end of May and the beginning of June, we're talking about that drought area expanding, my concern over summer increases with respect to heat and drought. Now, summer has one major obstacle to overcome if that's the case, and that is the very warm water in the North Pacific. Now, we've been talking about the Central Pacific and La Nina-like weather there, but if the North Pacific doesn't play along, in other words, it stays warmer in the North Pacific, it's very difficult to have hot, dry conditions across the Midwest for summer. So we have competing ideas going on here, something we're going to have to keep a very, very close eye on as we move forward.
Anything on the global front we should check in on?
Real quick, internationally, a few areas. Ukraine. We know it's been dry through early spring. Forecast for the next 10 days has near average to wetter than average conditions for a lot of Ukraine and the southern Russian wheat belt. The rest of northern Europe, though, so if you just go from France all the way over to Poland, even up into the UK, does show up drier in that forecast. South America, where we're growing our safrinha crop, trying to get that crop finished and harvested soon, near normal precipitation moving forward, no major temperature stresses. Southern Brazil, still having problems with drought. Parts of Argentina, great weather for harvesting, but there's going to be a little bit of rain coming into like the Santa Fe region here pretty soon. And the last area I want to touch on is China. We haven't talked too much about China. Going into this spring, things were dry in China's main growing areas, except for that growing area north of the Korean Peninsula. As we look forward in the forecast, a front called the Mayu Front is setting up in far southern China, making flooding problems there. But just south of Beijing, over the next 7 days, I'm not picking up much rainfall from any of our global modeling centers, but it will be wetter than normal. That'll be to the north and east of Beijing. That would be that growing region that's just north of the Korean Peninsula. So we need to keep an eye on all of these regions as we progress through the rest of the spring and into summer, as we just watch overall global markets respond to weather conditions and how they're going to affect yields. So we got a lot to keep our eye on.
Indeed, and we'll depend on you, Eric, to make that happen. Eric Snodgrass, of course, is with Nutrient Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us here on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Stay with us. Up next, a bio of sorts of one of the brand new analysts to join our Commodity Week program. We talk with the Ted Spread on Twitter.
Support for WILL comes from the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership, sponsor of the three-part risk management webinar series on June 18th, 25th, and July 2nd. Notable keynote speakers will be featured. More details at ilsustainableag.org.
Well, yesterday afternoon, we recorded Commodity Week with our panelists, including Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and from First Choice Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, Merrill Crowley. Our special guest for the day was Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge out of Chicago, Illinois. In the first few minutes of that program, we took some time to get to know Ted and his background. I asked him to give me a bit of a bio on himself.
Well, hey, Todd, thanks for having me. As you said, my name is Ted Seifert. I'm from Zahner Ag Hedge. I run the agricultural hedge division of a brokerage firm based out of Chicago. And we do most of our work working with, I'd say, 70% with producers and about 30% end users. And we work exclusively with them to try to get to know their operation as much as we possibly can in order to guide them as if we were part of their operation. As far as my background, grew up in Western Illinois. My father was a dentist, but we had a 36-acre hobby farm growing up. We moved to the Chicagoland area when I was 13, went to school back in Western Illinois for agricultural economics, which eventually took me over to Europe for a year and 8 months to finish my economics degree. But I also took on an internship with a dairy company called Caverco. And when I came back from that, I walked onto the floor and really never left. While I might have left before, I stuck with the business, and to this point, I've been doing it for about 16 years now. So I really enjoy it. I love watching markets. I love talking about corn, wheat, soybeans, cattle, and hogs, dairy as well. Aside from that, I also really like cars. I have a penchant for ethanol, mainly because of my interest in cars. And also, I suppose, my interest in corn.
Do you race?
So, yeah, we have, the owner of my company and I have a membership to the Joliet Autobahn, which is outside of Chicago, and we go out there and do time attacks on the track a couple times a year. And I've got my 702 horsepower E85 powered Cadillac CTSV that I like to rip around the track in.
Oh, nice. I was making a guess given your comment about ethanol. I hadn't seen that somewhere else, so I thought maybe that was the case. One other thing from you. How is it that you decided to go back to Macomb and to major in ag econ, being a dentist's son that at 13 clearly went to high school in the Chicago area?
Right. Yeah. So a lot of it had to do with wanting to go back and see my friends who were all going to Western. But then also, I didn't really have the clear-cut agriculture economics degree in mind. I started out as econ, and my advisor sat me down and said, hey, you know you're an ag econ major, right? And I'm like, no, I'm an econ major. So she slides over my transcript, the classes that I've been taking, and she says, you're an ag econ major. So I kind of said, okay, yeah, I see your point. So let's go with that. And then she dropped it on me and said, hey, you know, we want to give out a scholarship for somebody to go study abroad in the Netherlands. It's usually help for the number one person in the ag econ department, but the number one and number two are Chinese exchange students that are here, and they don't want to go anywhere else because they're already studying abroad. So if you want to go, just write me a one-page letter, and we'll give you a scholarship to do so. So that was kind of just the whole thing fell in my lap, and it just all felt right, you know?
So the Netherlands, if you spent time on a dairy there, that had to be an interesting, maybe not because you didn't come from an ag background here, but it's just done differently there. Not potentially the production side, but how they have to deal with the European Union and the regulatory functions.
Absolutely. And so this was one of the largest dairy companies in the world at the time, Cabarco, now Friesland Block. And what they were doing in the project that they brought me in on is they have subsidiaries really all over the world, and their marketing plans and all their central strategy was all in different languages. So they wanted to take their main strategy and make it uniform throughout the company. And to do that, they wanted to translate it from Dutch to English. So all of this paperwork was being translated. They were sending it to me to just kind of go over to make sure everything looked right. So it was really very simple work on my end. But I'm getting to read all of their regulation and everything like that. So that was really very interesting for me. And then when I came back to the States and stepped into the dairy pit, because one of my good friend's fathers was a broker in the dairy pit, and my friend was one of his clerks, and they said to me, "Hey, you know, business is good. We need another clerk. How do you feel about working on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange?" And I said, "Yeah, that sounds amazing. Let's do that." And so it just all kind of snowballed from there. And I really, it feels like my path was decided before I even started walking down it, you know?
What was your first job at the CME in the pit?
Yeah, so I was a runner in the dairy pit. And then I went from being a runner to a phone clerk and outtrade clerk. And then I started filling paper in the pit. Then I went over to the Chicago Board of Trade because we needed, at the time I was working for R.J. O'Brien, and they needed somebody over there. So I went over to the Chicago Board of Trade. And then ultimately, one of the institutional brokers at R.J. O'Brien, Cindy Yeaman, said, "Hey, you know, we've been doing a lot of business through you. You've got good insight in the markets. I want somebody to come off the floor and be a broker upstairs and deal with some of our institutional clients, you know, Frito-Lay, General Mills, things like that." And I thought that was a super interesting opportunity. So I jumped at that, did that for almost 5 years. But that was at a time where the industry was changing. You know, it wasn't so much about needing advice on strategies or where the market was going or sort of insight, because all of the commercials, you know, they had guys like me in-house. They had, you know, guys they paid a ton of money to that were making decisions on the market. So basically it just became about execution, which means our profit margins were really getting cut to nothing as we were all competing for the same big clients. And that's when I decided, you know what, I can take a lot of these option strategies that a lot of these big players are using and kind of flip them over for the producer side of things and really cater towards the farmer, you know, the mid to large size guy that, you know, they're doing 20 different things on any given day. Watching the markets is one of them, but it can't be their focus all of the time. Well, for me, that's the only hat I wear. I'm good at it, and I'm good at using the strategies to, you know, give us opportunities to manage risk. So I saw that as an opportunity, and I kind of ran with it. And about 10 years ago, I was recruited to come and take over or actually start Zahner Ag Hedge, a division of the Zahner brokerage firm. And I've been doing that ever since.
And if you'd like to hear more from Ted Seifert, in particular what he thinks about the commodity markets, you can do that this weekend on many of these radio stations. Just listen to our Commodity Week program or find it online to listen to right now at willag.org, willag.org. Ted Seifert is with Zahner Ag Hedge out of Chicago. He was joined on that program by Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and Merrill Crowley from First Choice Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois. Again, find it online, listen to it on demand anytime you'd like. In fact, all of our programming is there for you to do that. Just click and play right out of the website, or you can listen to it in your favorite podcast applications, including NPR One, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and many, many more. Thank you so much for spending your time here with us at Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.